They for Alex Sean, we're in Tati Kom Emuna. Alex Sean is going through four main points on the topic of Emuna. Last time we started the topic of Da Ma Shetashiv La Bikoros, and we spoke about how it's not really Emuna. We gave the mashal, the parable of someone who discovers that they were adopted, and they do a blood test to check, is this really their mother? And then only once they've done that blood test, and they've clarified, yes, this is my mother, and they can start developing the relationship. So doing that blood test was an essential prerequisite to ensure, I don't want to invest in this woman if it doesn't turn out to be my mother. But you can't call that a connection. That's just removing all the all the doubts, removing all the probability that it may be inappropriate, and then you can go and invest in the relationship. So knowing what to answer all the doubts that a person has is important. It's going to enable you to then develop a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu in an authentic and true way. It won't be that you'll be developing a relationship with Hashem and then a year down the line and say, but who said there's even a God? You want to ensure that when you're developing a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you do it in a pure sense. So yes, you have to answer those questions. But answering those questions is not emunah. That's not developing the relationship with Hashem. That's not going to form a bond. That's just going to remove the doubt. But then what do you have? You have clarity. You have to build that clarity. Meaning, when you have clarity that this woman is your mother, you still know nothing about her. You still haven't invested in the relationship. You still have to do that next stage. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, Haveo shaked lilmod Torah. Veda mash tashiv la pikoros. Veda lifnei mi ata amel. Veneemanu ba malachtecha shishlem lecha aschar purotev. Eile shlosha devarim shamar Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. Who omer ki aderach hayishara shidbak ba adam hu leiv tov. This is the same Rabbi Elazar ben Arach who says that the path for a person to follow is one of leiv tov. And the Meforshim say the three things that he says in this Mishnah parallel the three things that bring a person to a leiv tov. Those are the three things that bring a person to a leiv tov. Number one, shkeida b'limud Torah vaday mevi'a l'idei ma'ala zo. The person invests himself in Torah, his mind is going to become clarified along Hashem's way of mind. This is an important point. I think it's a derech agav, but I just want to emphasize it. That people learn Gemara, and in their learning of Gemara, they sometimes ask themselves, like, why am I investing so much effort and time into learning a wisdom which is not a relevant wisdom? I could be investing in understanding how to run a stock market, and I could become wealthy. I could invest in learning educational psychology and I could relate to people, my friends, my children better. I can see the benefit of many types of wisdom. And in Gemara, not always can I see what the benefit of this wisdom is. Sometimes it's not relevant what I'm learning. If you learn the halachas of Ben Sora Amore, then it's defined as not being relevant. Defined that way. Why are we investing in that? So when you're learning God's wisdom, it's not so relevant what the topic is. It's tuning your way of thinking into God's way of thinking. I once had a nice explanation of that. That Rabbi Stav once said to me, he said if he would find a letter, there was a tshuva that the Rambam has, which is against a certain group of Muslims and their philosophy, which that philosophy doesn't exist nowadays. And I was reading it and thinking this is a waste of time because I'm not debating this debate. Like that doesn't interest me what those particular type of Arab philosophical thinkers' belief was that I'm in that view, that I need to see how the Rambam would refute that view. So Rav Stav said to me, it doesn't make a difference what their view is. It makes a difference how did the Rambam think. That when you see how the Rambam tackled that particular problem, and you get into the Rambam's way of thinking, even if that topic is not your topic, and that challenge is not your challenge, but that when you see how the Rambam tackles an issue, tackles a problem, you tune your mind into the wisdom of how the Rambam's mind worked. Then a new issue will come along that no one ever tackled before. And because you understand how to tackle those types of issues, even if it's a new topic, your mind is already attuned to the Rambam's way of thinking, you'll be able to address it. So, alachas kama vakama, lahavdil, when you're learning a sugya, which the sugya isn't so relevant, halacha lamaisa. But you're learning how Kodesh Baruch Hu thought about a particular topic. How Hashem related to the world in a certain way. Even if that particular topic is not a relevant topic for you, but Ezra Hashem, no one in this room will ever have a Ben Sora or Moritz. It's very unlikely. Your voice and your wife's voice are exactly the same. Like,
just as a side point. Maybe he will drink and eat that amount of food, but it's very unlikely that the details of the fact will happen. So let's say it will never happen, but nevertheless, you're learning what is the Torah's attitude, Hashem's way of thinking towards certain things. And therefore, the value you have in Torah is A, what Hashem wants from me, where it does come down to halakha l'maaseh. But on a deeper level, it's tuning your thoughts into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of thinking. You're aligning yourself with Hashem. And if you ask, how can you be davik with Hashem? How are you davik? Do I go to the kotel and kiss the kotel? Is that how I'm davik with Hashem? I go and I hug the Sefer Torah, am I davik with Hashem? The way you become close to Hashem is that you think along the same lines as the way Hashem thinks. That's how you're close to someone. When you say, I feel close to someone, what does it mean? He gets me, I get him, we understand each other, we think along the same wavelength, we're close to each other. That's what it means to be close to someone. You think along the same pattern of thought. You understand each other's way of thinking. When you learn Hashem's wisdom, even if the topic is not so relevant to you, but you're able to think along Hashem's way of thinking about something, you become close to Hashem. You're thinking Hashem's way. So way number one that the Rabbi Elazar ben Acha is writing is by being shakud lilmod Torah, by investing in the learning of Torah. Point number two is, hayidiyah lifnei me'ata amel. All the learning of Torah, if you're not bringing it back and attributing it back to Hashem, won't have this effect. You might say, how brilliant the wisdom of the ancient Mesopotamian Shammaites is. How clever they were, those people. Like, what's it going to bring you close to? What are you connecting to through all of this? The Judeo-Christian moral ethic. What are you talking about? This is like Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Borei Olam's mind you're tapping into here. This is Hashem. So one thing is to invest in Torah. Another thing is to attribute it to who it must be attributed to. Dalif name mi ata amel. You should know who all your effort is before, whose mind you're tapping into, who you're connecting to. Uvehechreach aleinu lahavin ki gam b'li yediyah ma la'ashiv la'pikoros I efshar lagia le'lev tov. Uvemet pashutu ki kol ziyah apikoros choseves lefnei alev. The person doesn't remove all those doubts, he won't be able to open himself to Hashem. When a person comes to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this niggling thought says, maybe he doesn't exist, or how could it be that it was God and the Holocaust happened, or I heard that God can't lift up a rock, can't break out of serving, made up, oh, you see, the problem is some issue. Yeah. So if that niggling thought is not resolved, then all of the goodwill that you have to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is blocked. You're learning well, and you desire to connect, but suddenly, maybe not, and that's Amalek, that was their power. We're going to connect this back to Purim. The power that Amalek had wasn't to make us not believe in Hashem. It was to say, maybe there's Hashem. And then once the Jew says, maybe. So you don't feel like you're being an apikoros there, because you're saying, maybe there is. But the very word maybe is already the doubt, which blocks you from deeply connecting. Because when a person senses a love from another person and they're willing to invest, then they're able to open their heart and feel the connection. When a person isn't sure, maybe that person loves them, but maybe that person's just doing it to get their money. How do I know that you really love me? Maybe you just want my heir, my estate. By then, they won't be able to open their heart fully, because maybe you're out to get me. Maybe there's a trick that's taking place here. And then even if there's the full will to give it over, it'll be blocked along the way. And Malik's goal was just not to say that it's not true, but just to say, maybe it's true, could be. And once you say it could be, but that also implies that it could not be, the person won't be able to fully open his heart. And therefore, da mash the shivra tikoros is essential. Not because that's emunah. That's not emunah. But you need to clear away all the thorns, you need to clear away all the doubts in order that when you come to open your heart fully, when the Yetzahara comes to you, when Amalek comes to you and says, maybe not, you say, I've clarified that topic, and I know that it is. That doubt, I've resolved. Now, what's interesting is, you don't always remember how you resolved it. Sometimes it will happen that you have an issue that's bothering you, philosophically, and you look into it, and you speak to someone, and you get clarity on the matter, and you have clarity, and you're calm, and you continue in Avodat Hashem. And then later on, that topic comes up again. Someone asks you the question, or you read about the question, or you think of the question, and you can't remember the whole mahalach. It doesn't matter. That the fact that you know that it's resolved by you, and you know I've looked into it, I don't need to re-research it every time. You have to come to a place where you say, That question of Bechira Chofshis versus Hashem's all knowledge, I've researched that topic, I've looked into it, and I know I have the answer. Right now, I can't remember exactly how to formulate all the answers. But I know the answer. If I wanted to now, I could go and, you know, clarify the whole sugya again and get clarity of the answer. I don't need to do it every time. And Amalek will come and they'll say, oh, you don't know it, you see you don't know it. And you're able to answer him and say, when I wanted to clarify it, I clarified it, and I'm calm about this topic now. And you can put it back in its place, and you can carry on and avodat Hashem in a pure way. You don't have to always be on edge of, do I know it right now or not? Do I remember that I remember the answer to the... You can say, I clarified this sugya, I remember speaking to a rabbi about it, he gave me an answer, it resounded with me at the time, it's still true. Nothing changed. And by having that inner calmness of, I know that I know, you're able to then continue and open your heart to Hashem. And that's Damash Hashem Lo Kamos. You don't have to go looking for questions. But when a question comes to you that bothers you and you feel it's holding you back from being able to connect purely to Hashem, it's important to clarify. Sometimes to clarify then, sometimes to say, I know that I need to clarify this, to clarify when the time is right. You don't have to like stop everything else. You can say, that's Ben Azman, I want to research that topic. Or when I meet someone very great, I'm going to write that down in my notebook. When I meet someone who I feel can really address this, I'm going to ask them about it. You can notice that you're going to address it. That's enough. I'm acknowledging that I'm going to address it. I've written it down in my book. I'm going to get back to it when I have time. In the meantime, I'm carrying on. And address it at the right time. Get to a place where you feel comfortable with the answer. If you don't feel comfortable with the answer, you say, okay, I got closer. It's you know, because brought from this world for many, many decades, and with Hashem, I'll clarify more and more as time goes on. I don't have to answer everything right this second. I can continue my relationship with Hashem. And I know the answer will be answered. I know I'll clarify it. It doesn't have to be right today. And I'm able to put it aside. I will answer it. It's just enabling you to put all those questions on the side, clarify them when you need to, know that you know, and continue your path of building your relationship with Hashem. Because all that philosophy is not connecting you to Hashem. If you're connected to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's what you need to primarily invest in. Harei muchrach kol adam la'amod tamid al mishma. A person always has to be clarifying himself, careful, lenakot atzmo mikol avak apikorsis, and cleanse himself from traces of apikorsis thought that come to him, hamemalei kofach atchala olam, which fill the world. Veliot muchzak betanot tzichliot negil adiot imifsadot. And a person has to know, I know the answer to those things. I remember there was a book, Rabbi Ari Kaplan has a tremendous anthology. There's a blue one and there's a red one. So the red one is five books that he wrote on relationship with Hashem, clarifying doubts if you don't believe in God, clarifying questions against missionaries. And after reading that book, I remember feeling a sense of deep calmness. Like, any question out there that needs to be addressed can be addressed. I, at this point, don't remember a thing you wrote in the book. I imagine that I've absorbed a lot of it and I think of it a lot generally, but I don't remember to attribute it to that. It probably became just part of my way of thinking, automatically, without me being able to remember. I read this in that book, I just kind of know it. I remember it, but without attributing it. But there's a great calmness when you say, I've addressed those questions, I've looked into them. When I was in Shana Aleph, it was a big topic for me as an individual. And also towards the Ben Azmanim of the end of Shana Aleph, I was going to be a Madruch and Eish HaTorah. And I knew that those questions are probably going to come up. And because I knew that, and also because of me myself, it was a big topic for me. And I went up to the stairs, we used to be upstairs, to the English library, and I did a lot of reading. And at the time, it was like a burning topic for me at the time. And I read and read and read and read and read. And I was really content. And I felt like, okay, I've addressed all these topics. And I went on that program where I was a Madruch and Eish HaTorah, some of the topics came up in conversation. I felt like confident in being able to resolve it. And the next year, I was very off-put by the topic. I felt like I don't want to discuss this anymore. Not because I was scared of it, just because it was like, I've resolved it already. Why do you want to go back and talk about it again? And when they offered me to be my drift the following year, I refused. I turned them down. I said, I don't want to go back into that space of creating doubt again. I don't want to go back into the space of saying, maybe it doesn't exist, and resolving it again. Like, I'd gone through that whole process, come to a deep sense of clarity, felt like I was connected to the Prophet through Tefillah in a very authentic way. I didn't feel comfortable going back to the place of, if he doesn't exist, it was uncomfortable for me to go. If someone were talking about it, I would be happy to discuss it. I didn't want to bring myself in that situation. So I volunteered to work in Eish HaTorah in the Beis Medrash where people who wanted to just learn, then I was available to learn with them. I loved them. It was an amazing summer. Seven base measures, people came in, random people off the street, they still would just bring in, here's an open chavruta, sit down and learn, whatever, usually chumash. But usually, sometimes it was in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, once it was in Gemara even. It was an amazing summer, the second summer. Because it wasn't like doubts, it wasn't full of doubt. The first summer was crucial for me. I wouldn't be able to get to the second summer if I wouldn't have done the first one. I had to go through that process of knowing there are questions, acknowledging the questions, resolving the questions to the degree that I was able to at the time, feeling a sense of inner content, and then I have a relationship with Hashem, let me now invest in building. Does that mean there were never doubts that came later? There were lots of doubts that came in different areas later on. But I felt grounded enough at that point that I could address them without that destabilizing me. I felt I'm stable, and I have a question, I can resolve the question, but I'm still stable. As opposed to before then, before, like, everything was on the cards, you know? Who said that the whole system is true? Who said that the whole system is grounded and makes sense? And I felt like this burning need to clarify and clarify. And I read many, many books, or parts of many books, didn't read everything. I read the topics that were interesting to me, and I wanted to invest in, I read those sections of those books. And I felt clarified and calm, and I was able to know. Dharma, that's Shiva, because the essential of the person resolves those things. Hashkafot nechonot adayin einan emuna. When you clarify these points, it's still not called emuna. Aval biladeyen, but unless you clarify them, you can't get the real emuna. That was point number three. And point number four, the final one is, yesh asher medabrim al emuna, umitkavanim lemadriga gavoa meod el dveikus v'ashem. So there is another level of emuna which the deepest Sfarim write about, where they're talking about Adam Gadol Chai Be'emunato, someone who's living with a constant awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at every moment, who's living with an awareness in every action that he does, and in every speech that he says, and in every thought that he has, that he's aware of Hashem with him and guiding him and recognizing Hashem. And that's what on the Torah, the Pasuk, Al Kain Avdi Moshe Bechol Beiti Ne'eman Hu. Ne'eman doesn't just mean that he chose Judaism over Christianity. Right? Judaism over polytheism. That doesn't mean that was Ne'eman in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu. Rather, as the Rashbam on that pasuk says, Kavua umiyusad kol sha'a b'yom k'mo shekatuv yated b'mkom Ne'eman yated atakua b'mkom chazak eino maher lipot. When you have a tent peg fixed in the ground, he's permanently grounded in Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu, he was always in the world of Hashem. You know, most people have moments where they're thinking begadlut. Now they're thinking like of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe when they're saying Shema, maybe on Yom Kippur. At a time when they're begadlut, where they like make a silly joke, and they joke around, and they say anything, say things. And there's a whole spectrum in between. When someone says something that they regret saying immediately afterwards, that was the moment when they were being katan. And they lost sense of the fact that Hashem was in the world for a minute, they were just making a joke. They were just playing around. And you can judge, or a person can judge himself by like how much percentage of his time he's begadlut. Right, a person who's all the time messing around, joking around, making jokes, forgetting about Hashem, speaking Lashon Hara, making fun of other people, wasting time. So he's most of the time in katnut. Most of the time he's in like small-mindedness. And he has moments where he connects, hopefully when he's davening, hopefully on Yom Nerayim. Like he has moments where he connects with his begadlut. And the greater a person is, then even in more mundane things, he's begadlut. For example, he gets on a bus, and he pays the bus driver, and he has in his mind, he's fulfilling a mitzvah of paying a worker on time. That's the way that he thinks. He's the gadlut all the time. Like he sees everything as part of Hashem's world. And if someone would make a silly comment, it would never occur to him to make fun of them. Because he's the gadlut. He's thinking of Kavod Adam. He's thinking I'm in Hashem's world and I'm presenting Hashem. I'm not saying he's envisioning the letters. You can't in front of him every moment. He's a relaxed individual. But like he's constantly aware of Allah and Hashem in his world. And the greater a person is, the more percentage of his day of his time he's the gadlut. Moshe Rabbeinu was Ne'eman. He was 100% aware of Hashem at all times. That's a level of emunah which was a very high level. Not the relevant level of emunah for us right now, but although recognizing there's a spectrum here, and recognizing that like we are all in Gadrut and we are all in Katnut. Even Gadolim, even great people. Sometimes say something which is like a bit of, I remember clearly once, I was in a shir of someone very esteemed, and it slipped. They didn't mean to say it, but it slipped. But someone made a comment which was a bit silly, and they made like a very subtle joke at that person's expense. Very subtle. Like most people didn't notice it. The person himself didn't notice it. I noticed it, and I noticed that immediately after how the rabbi was said, like regretted it. He said, never mind. He just kind of wanted it to pass. And he saw the person didn't understand what he was saying, so he let it pass. And the person said, well, what? And he said, oh, nothing. And I could see that the rabbi himself regretted saying it. And it passed. And Baruch Hashem, it passed. But like, even sometimes great people have a moment of katnut. Like where they just like caught off guard and they did something inappropriate. They're still gedolim. That doesn't take away from them being gadol. Because you're gedolim according to like the majority of your time, but gadol, like overall who you are. And even people who are overall are very great have moments where they slip. It doesn't mean that, oh, look, they're not for real, they're all a fake. No! It means they're 98% good, and I'm not, so let's look up to them. I'm looking up to the gedolim who are greater than me. Maybe you'll find a Moshe Rabbeinu who is 100%, but it's likely everyone that you ever meet will always have a moment of katnut. Maybe you'll see it, maybe you won't, but it's likely that everyone in the world that you'll ever relate to will have that at some point. If not now, maybe when they're younger. Even the Chofetz Chaim, imagine he had moments of katnut when he was younger, before he developed and invested in himself, before he became so great. Everyone has katnut at some point. That's the highest level of emunah. Inyan zeh shel emunah, who saw the mistot haTorah v'darga nifla, and that's our desire, our goal that we're longing for. Ha'avat nafsho shel adam mevakesh Hashem. So let's just summarize the 4 points that we made. Point number one that we made was, emunah is inbuilt, it's an instinct that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. Everyone has trust, has faith in something, that's the simplest, most basic one. Everyone always has that. And there it's more of a question of where you channel it. Everyone channels their parents initially. Some people lose the trust in their parents. Everyone channels it to something great and big, which is beyond them. So the reason Hashem gives us that is for us to channel it to Hashem. That was point number one. Point number two was the path of how to develop emunah, which is what we're going to discuss in much more detail in 2 chapters' time, is imagery. We went at length to discuss what imagery is and how imagery is, on the good and on the bad, a tool which is what causes us to invest and trust in and connect to. Point number three that we started, that we carry on with today, was knowing what to answer in Afikoros. That's more philosophy. It's not emunah, but people call it emunah because it's a prerequisite for emunah often. And the last point was the highest point of Moshe Rabbeinu. So just by way of introduction to the next topic, the Rambam, in his commentary on Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, says, "Kina v'tava v'kavod motzim et adam min olam." Behu ki be'ele hamidos o be'achad mehen yafsid emunat haTorah v'achreah. The Rambam says that if a person has jealousy or desire or seeks out honor, it takes him out of the world. And what does the Rambam say taking out of the world means? What does it mean to be out of the world? The Rambam says that a person loses their faith in Torah. And according to the Rambam, the world is faith in Torah. Shalosh midot elu motzit et adam min haolam. What does it mean to leave the world? Emunah. A person who's in emunah, he's in the world. He's present. He exists. He's alive. He thrives. He has a sense of being. He has a sense of place. A person who has emunah exists. He feels that he exists. He feels present. He has a world of emunah. And when a person loses those three things, then they lose their place. They don't have a sense of existence. Okay, well, I'm going to pause now because it's going to take me too long to describe this, but I'll just say that he's now going to go through those 3 points, Tava, Kina, and Kavod, and he's going to show how when a person is lacking one of those three, a person feels he doesn't have a place in the world. A person is jealous, feels, like you see by Haman in the Megillah Esther. Kol ze einenu shaveli. A person, nothing I have is worth anything. I've lost my place. Everything I have, I don't have. Because he doesn't have emunah that Hashem's giving you exactly what you need. A person who has emunah, he exists in the world. A person who doesn't have emunah doesn't exist in the world. Then how do you not exist? By having one of those 3 faulty points. That's very clear. The Purim position will continue in the next opportunity.